UK Wine Show, show number 158, Recycling with Gemma Scott. G'day, my name's Chris Scott and welcome to the UK Wine Show. It's show number 158 for the 29th of May 2009, and it's another full show. This week we start looking at recycling bottled glass. This is part of a series in which we find out what's happening to the mountain of green glass we import into the UK. This week we talk with Gemma Scott, Recycling Manager for Richmond-upon-Thames. We find out about how they collect those glass bottles and how they have a different value depending upon the method of collection. I spent the last weekend running a tasting theatre in Blenheim Palace, Winston Churchill's old family home. The weather was great and the people were really nice. And if you're in the UK, I hope you had a great bank holiday last weekend. A few people have said they're having trouble finding me on Facebook, something about the thousands of Chris Scotts. Ah, well, perhaps I should have had a unique name like Fino Jeroboam. But if you look for me using my email address, chris.scott@ukwineshow.co.uk, you can give me some feedback on the show in either email or on Facebook. As we're coming to the end of English Wine Week, I thought the mystery grape this week might be one of my favourite white grapes grown in England. German in origin, bred from Silvana and a Riesling cross with Müller Thurgau. Do you know what the grape variety is? Have a think about that. Well, next up we have the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. This week sees British supermarket Waitrose plant its own vines at Leckford Farm Estate in Hampshire. The planting will take place on the first day of the Waitrose Spring Food Festival, with a special ceremony attended by Waitrose MD Mark Price and Estate Chairman Don Curry. Waitrose is the first UK retailer to establish its own English vines, but customers will need to wait until 2014 before they can enjoy the first wine, a sparkling wine which will be under the Waitrose Leckford label. The first crop of grapes will take 3 years and the wine will take 2 years to be produced and matured. In 2008, Waitrose reported an increase in sales of English wine of over 18% year on year, and they have a huge 55% market share of English wine in UK supermarkets. Waitrose say there's not enough English wine to meet customer demand, with sales growth outstripping supply.
Well, it's that time of year when wineries are planting heavily in the English countryside. Stephen Spur has been planting a new vineyard, as well as other vineyards increasing land in the UK. Maybe we should call it English Planting Week rather than English Wine Week. One region that's been losing vineyards is Pomerol. What's going on there, Jane?
Pomerol producers are opposing new legislation made earlier this month by the Pomerol Wine Union, which would mean they would have to make their wines within the appellation's 780 acres by 2018. With Pomerol land costing around 1 million euros per hectare, some producers say the ruling will cripple them financially. Some estates have their wine vinified outside the appellation, just a short distance away from the vineyard, and would have to invest heavily to set up production at the vineyard or at an alternative site in Pomerol. Some vineyard sites have no access to electricity or water and no buildings. The union said the new rule followed the same logic as the Saint-Emilion Grand Cru system and that it validates the notion of mise en bouteille au château. Jean-Michel Laporte of Château La Conseillante said a middle ground could be followed. He suggested that certain châteaux who had been vinifying outside Pomerol could continue while new entrants would have to vinify inside Pomerol.
While some small producers may have to make arrangements to make their wine somewhere else, don't you think that they could find an alternative company to make the wines within the region? The thought that every small scrap of land needs its own winery is silly. Although I do feel a bit sorry for Jean-Michel. After all, they've had their plot before the creation of the AC system in 1936. Speaking of quality control standards, what's going on in Prosecco, Jane?
It has been agreed by the Italian government that the Prosecco di Conegliano di Valdobbiadini DOC zone will become a DOCG from the 2009 vintage, and the IGT zone between Friuli and Veneto will be upgraded to DOC status. The new regulations stipulate that yields for both are to be reduced, with the greatest reduction in the new DOC from 180 hectolitres per hectare to 126 hectolitres per hectare. Meanwhile, yields in the DOCG will reduce by just 5 hectolitres to 90 hectolitres per hectare. This drop in production could put pressure on the price of Prosecco, but new legislation due to be passed on the 1st of August will at least protect the name by making it illegal for producers outside the zone to use Prosecco on the label. Instead, they'll have to use the name Glera, which is an alternative name currently used for Prosecco. That's it from me this week, but don't forget to visit our website 3050.co.uk for these stories in full.
Cheers, Jane. I've been really enjoying some nice Proseccos of late, mostly between the 10 and 12 quid. For a wine that's fairly simple to make and relatively high in yields, there's no good reason for the prices of this type of wine to rise. At the bottom end of Prosecco, these wines will need to step up in quality and price, but I'd hate to see the prices rise across the board. Now, sparkling wines are popular, but what other styles of wine are popular? In this week's Spotlight, we look at the poll for May, and the question was, in general, are you a white, red, rosé wine drinker? Now, 9% of people said they actually preferred beer or spirits or other drink, not wine at all. Now, this is incredibly low, but you must remember, to vote in our polls, you need to be on our site or attending a wine tasting, so you've probably shown a strong interest in wine already. Of the three wine categories, red dominates at 62%, followed by white at 22%. Only 6% have said that rosé is their preferred tipple. Many consider reds as a more serious wine. But as I write this and the sun is baking down in London, I have a strong preference for whites and bubbles. I consider myself to be colour agnostic, and the occasion defines my preference more than the colour. Certainly in winter, in a dark, stormy night, reds have their place. But next time we run this poll, I think we're going to do it in winter and ask people if they don't have a colour preference. One wine that has a definite colour is this week's mystery grape. This white wine was developed by the Germans and used in England. It's similar to Sauvignon Blanc. But what's been achieved by the Germans in breeding is a cool climate grape variety that can be grown successfully on vineyard lands which are much worse in terms of temperature than Riesling or Silvaner can produce, with a generally higher quality of wine and character. As a result, it represents one of the most important crossings in its homeland and also found favour in England, where it's the fourth most planted grape, accounting for around 10% of vineyards and producing relatively full, currant light flavours. Green apples and riper stone fruits are also possible. And it's also named after the Greek/Roman god of wine. That should help you a lot. Ponder that while we start our mini-series following the story of a glass bottle from recycling bin, reprocessing, and back to your table. Or maybe under your car. More on that during the interview. To find out more, let's have a listen to Gemma Scott. Hi, I'm here with Gemma Scott. You're the recycling manager for Twickenham Council.
London Borough of Richmond upon Thames.
Oh, really? Sorry.
No problem. but based in Twickenham at the moment.
Based in Twickenham. Your London Borough of Richmond upon Thames's council is my local council. And I thought we'd come down and talk a wee bit about recycling, curb collection, all that sort of thing, focusing mainly on the wine bottles. But before we crack into that, how long have you been working here?
I've been here now just over a year as a recycling manager. And before that, I was working for the London Borough of Camden. Mm-hmm. So, based in Kentish Town, in North London.
Okay.
As their senior recycling officer.
Oh, we'll have to do a wee comparison. Who's the better borough for recycling later on? What exactly does a recycling manager do?
Ooh, what a question. Whole heap of things. I mean, I look after a recycling transfer station, so that's basically where all of the residents recycling, once it's collected by our contractor, Veolia. That all comes to the depot here in Twickenham, where we are now. And that's where it's stored until it's in large enough quantities to go out for reprocessing further on. So I manage that site. Also the Household Waste and Recycling Centre. That's based in Kew. Residents can go there. They can recycle a huge variety of things, including batteries, fluorescent tubes, timber,
concrete.
Soil, concrete, you name it, really.
Yeah, I've spent a few times there.
Yep.
Christmas trees.
Yes, Christmas trees. Obviously not this time of year, but as well as dumping any bulky goods they might have, so any mattresses or also electrical equipment. So
are you responsible for hitting the government European targets? When at the end of the year the council looks at you and goes, what went wrong?
Yes, my team are responsible for meeting recycling targets, yes.
Excellent. Is it easy?
Is it easy? Ooh, what a question. To be honest with you, actually, Richmond residents are exceedingly well-educated and very, very keen on recycling. So we've got a recycling rate of over 40%, which is one of the highest in London.
Even higher than Camden?
That's higher than Camden.
Yes.
Yeah, so over 40%, which is, you know, thanks to our, you know, our residents for being, you know, being so careful in what they throw away and how they throw away as well.
I suppose the key thing we want to talk about is glass, and particularly green glass and white. From your point of view, is there a difference between clear glass and green glass? Do you care?
In what sense?
Economic value, how you process it.
As I'm sure some people might be aware, but there's high value in clear glass. We do a lot of clear glass manufacturing in this country. So pasta jars, jam jars, that kind of thing. There's quite a big manufacturing base in this country for the use of clear glass. Whereas for green glass, there's much, much less of a manufacturing base because obviously we're importing a lot of that green glass, certainly for wine bottles, from places like France, South Africa. I'm sure you and your listeners are more au fait with where the green glass bottles come from than I am.
But it's mainly wine.
But it's a lot of wine. Yeah. And also things like Stella and beer.
We won't talk about beer. We are a wine show after all. Okay. Is it just the curbside that you guys collect glass from, or is there any other place?
We collect glass from curbside. So that's through recycling boxes, which I'm sure lots of your listeners have got at home. So that's one way we collect them. And the other way we collect them is, by on street recycling banks. So they're, you know, banks that you might get in Sainsbury's or supermarkets, side of the road. You know, we've got, you know, well over 50. In the borough here in Richmond, but also we offer similar sites on estates. So that's households that can't have curbside collection of a black box because they don't have a curbside.
Yeah.
So we offer those container facilities as well.
Is there a difference between curbside and the, what do you call them?
We call them bring sites.
Bring sites.
So you're bringing your material to them.
Okay. I noticed in the curbside, we just put everything into a box, and after talking to you earlier, I think I put some of the wrong stuff in the wrong boxes sometimes. But everything just goes in, whereas I notice when I've taken boxes or anything to those bring sites, mm-hmm. You'll end up having to sort it a bit more. Does that make any difference to you guys?
Yeah, I mean, we did used to collect things, materials segregated. So as you were saying, in the different materials, we've recently changed to a scheme where we collect, all our glass, all our cans and all our plastic bottles together, in a black box, which we supply our residents with. It's a lot easier for residents. I haven't got to really consider what they're doing. They can just put it all into the one box. And also it's a lot more cost effective and environmentally effective for us. We don't need as many vehicles on the streets. Which obviously is good in terms of CO2 emissions. We don't need as many staff and not as many vehicles. So,
what do you do afterwards? Do you sort it afterwards, or does it go to a different channel? Or
yeah, all the material from the curbside, the black box I was talking about just now, that all comes to the site that we're in now, and we've obviously just been around and had a look at it all.
Mm-hmm.
That all comes here. Then it goes to a materials recycling facility, which is based in Crayford. That's in Kent, just over the border from Bexley. And that's where it's sorted. So it's sorted using kind of high-tech sorting equipment, so optical sorting for the plastics. There is a little tiny bit of manual sorting in there. It's also in terms of getting out steel and aluminium. We take it out by magnets. And then it goes on from there as a segregated material, so as a segregated mixed glass material
to reprocess. Yeah, I was going to say, you've got a bit of white and a bit of
yeah.
clear and blue and brown. And do you get much blue glass?
Very little, yeah, very little, and there is
German wines.
There's wine in blue, blue glass. Really,
German wine comes in blue glass.
Never seen it. I know there's you get some mineral water in blue glass.
So it sounds like the bring area where we sort it into different mm-hmm. white and brown and
clear.
Do you mix it back up afterwards, or do you sell it into different places? Do you sell the wine, or do you ship it off to China, or what do you do with your
the wine or the glass?
No, not the wine. We drink the wine. No, the glass. You know.
No, that's sold on with for Three British Glass for Richmond anyway. Mm-hmm. Different councils will have different reprocessors, but British Glass, as I say, are ours, and we sell on the glass as we collect it, so as the segregated colours from the bring sites only.
Mm-hmm.
So the clear will be sold off and the green will be sold off. Very often, depending on the market, we'll mix the brown with the green. Brown is such a tiny proportion, which is what we discussed before, tiny proportion of what comes out of households in terms of glass. So it's not something that we're too worried about, or reprocessors are too worried about mixing.
Okay, and so they've now got these big stacks of green and brown and clear, and but not blue, obviously. What happens to the mixed glass? Is it that's already pre-mixed up? I presume even like when I put glass into my recycling bin, sometimes it breaks, so it would be pretty hard to separate out the various shards of blue and green and yellow. Not yellow.
Yeah, the glass from the curbside, which is the black box recycling we were talking about, that goes mostly into road aggregate.
What do you mean by that?
So, like asphalt, which obviously makes roads, it's called glassfelt.
Oh, okay.
So up to about 30% of the asphalt that goes into some motorways and some roads will be crushed glass.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is that why I keep getting flat tyres?
I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, for example, part of the M6, part of the new extension of the M6 was made with glassfelt.
Okay.
So is that millions, really millions and millions of bottles.
How many millions? I think you showed me some statistics earlier.
14 million crushed bottles.
Okay, so that's quite a bit. Is that quite common, though? Because there seems to be like an awful lot of glass coming out of my house anyway. I would have thought that, you know, you add that up to everybody else, you'd still land up with loads of extra mixed glass. Is that the only outlet for that mixed glass?
Mostly. I mean, these days, companies like British Glass, and it's one of the biggest in the UK, they are actually looking at colour segregating. And there have been trials, certainly in certain parts of the country, looking at separating those, I think, through some kind of optical sorting mechanism, you know, firing lasers at them. Different colours go off in different directions from the belt. I think some of those trials have been quite successful. So, you know, fingers crossed that hopefully they can, you know, they can work out and...
So what happens to green glass? Because you said earlier that we don't tend to recycle or use green glass as much. Is that mainly driven into, I think, products like the asphalt?
Green glass, if you're collecting it segregated, separately, I mean, so like we do at our bring sites in Richmond, that goes to British Glass, and I believe you're going to speak to one of the glass manufacturers another time, and that actually goes back either into containers, so either into bottles, or jars. There's not a lot of green jars that you get these days. Or they'll export that to France, potentially, to those countries that are going to actually use the green glass to go back into bottles and jars.
I read somewhere, I wasn't quite sure, somewhere in your office, actually, being a bit nosy, that it's actually more environmentally friendly to use less energy to recycle glass, because I always thought you used a fairly similar amount of energy to recycle glass as opposed to create new glass.
It's roughly 25% less energy used when you're manufacturing recycled glass than from virgin materials, basically.
Okay.
I think it's something like you save 315 kilograms of CO2 per ton of glass that you're reusing or recycling rather than virgin material. So really good for the environment.
Okay, but you've got additional costs in terms of CO2 of collecting it and
That's including the collection.
Oh, so it is net energy efficient. Oh, it's not too bad.
I mean, there's been quite a lot of research done recently, and RAP, Waste Resources Action Programme, have done quite a lot of research on the life cycle of glass, especially when it goes back to containers.
Yeah.
Back to bottles and jars. Yeah, very energy efficient.
So it sounds like, tell me if I'm wrong or right here, but it sounds like you get two streams of glass, really, isn't it?
Mostly.
One's separated, and does it have a higher value?
Yes.
It does have a higher value.
Monetary value. Yeah.
And then there's another stream that is mixed, which has a slightly lower monetary value, because it's got to be used for things like Astro.
Yeah, you've got to separate it out first, and then... Yeah, and then the market is, it's a less valuable market, so it's going to aggregate rather than back into bottles.
Okay. I suppose you've got two options, really, either. You can either stick it into landfill, or you can try and recycle it.
Yep.
What's the cost of, say, landfill?
If you take out the collection costs, so the costs of actually collecting all the waste, etc., so purely the disposal cost of what it costs to put it per tonne into a landfill site, you're looking at just over £80 a tonne. Cost to the local authority for every ton that goes that's not recycled, basically, or goes to landfill.
Okay, and what about the value of glass? Because you obviously try and sell it on at some sort of profit or at a cost. What sort of rough value does that have?
We're looking at getting an income anything over about £20 a ton.
Okay, so
at the moment, and you'll get a higher value from the clear glass, because obviously that's very sought after and used in manufacturing in the UK. You'll get a higher value for that than you will for the green.
What about green glass? Does that, what sort of value does that have?
It's still over the 15, 20 pounds a ton value.
Okay, so one, the cost is either £80 to dump it or £15 to £20 to you. So it's worth, you know, 95 to 100 quid really, isn't
it? Yeah, no, massive. There's a huge difference in recycling it rather than sending it to landfill.
And does that actually come off the bottom line of the councils?
It goes into paying for the cost of the service, so paying for the cost of the collection.
Oh, okay, because you've still got the collection cost, haven't
you? Still got the collection cost.
And that doesn't matter if it's recycled or dumped, really, does it?
Varying cost for collection, but yeah, you're still going to have to pick it up, you're still going to have to put vehicles out there, you're still going to have to employ staff to do it, to collect
slightly higher. It should be higher, more expensive to collect recycled goods, though, because you've got more sorting, and you have, like, we have three different trucks, I think, coming down our street to collect all our different recycling.
Yeah, you'll have one vehicle for your black bag waste, so your rubbish that will go to landfill. Yeah. You'll have one vehicle that does food waste in one side of it, and paper and card in the other side of it. Yeah. So you've got two materials on that vehicle. Yeah. And then the third vehicle will do your mixed glass cans and plastic bottles.
Okay. Why do you not do it all on one truck? Is it just the way it works out?
You can't physically collect your rubbish, your landfill rubbish and your recycling and your food waste all on one vehicle. You wouldn't fit it all on there, and you'd need an awful lot of vehicles. Yeah. And obviously we want to keep as much as we can segregated, so into the different materials.
Obviously, if segregated materials have a higher value than non-segregated materials, mm-hmm. why do we not separate them out?
I think it depends how you see monetary value, because obviously if it's segregated, we're getting income. So we'll get X amount per tonne back. But it could cost us more to collect that. For example, in Richmond, when we did collect things separately on the curbside from people's houses, we had nearly double the amount of vehicles and nearly double the amount of staff. So the cost balanced themselves out there. Because obviously we were spending an awful lot of money on vehicles and staff collecting them. It's also the issue of if you've got vehicles in the streets that are taking a long time to segregate the material on the vehicles, you know, they're holding up the whole street.
Yeah. Especially on our street, we cul-de-sac.
Exactly. And they could be there, you know, they could be there double the amount of time that they would be there now.
Okay, I think we're going to wrap it up there, Gemma. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Gemma's raised some interesting points about mixed glass and sorted glass. Mixed glass in the UK has a much lower value, as green glass pollutes the higher value clear or flint glass. I was a bit surprised by the glass being used in roads, but it allows a very cheap collection option of mixing the glass up and doesn't go to landfill, so not a complete disaster, but I think I prefer glass to be in a continuous process of production, recycling, into production again. Next week, we're going to be talking with Paul McLavin from OI about recycling glass, what is valuable, and what are the problems using recycled glass. But before we finish up, that mystery grape variety is, well, it's my favourite wine grape grown in England. It is Bacchus. And to finish up with a quote, this time by Thomas Beacon, 1512 to 1567. When the wine is in, the wit is out. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.